I'm Jamila Maddox, and our next speaker is going to share on the ninth step, and I'll give you all Shirley M. from South Potomac, D.C.
Hi, family. I'm Shirley. I'm an addict. Lord. The last meeting, I was like, I hope everybody leave out of this room and don't come back. And it'd be just a couple of people. Also, it was another young lady, because I didn't have a clue that I needed to sign in when I came here to the convention. And so they didn't think that I showed up and they had put somebody else in my place. And I was like, okay, it's cool. You know, she can go ahead and share or whatever. But they called somebody up here and he said, go ahead, just make sure next time when you come to the convention, you sign in or whatever. I really, really like to thank the committee for asking me to share. I had not a clue why they called me. When I got the call and they said that they wanted me to share at the convention, I was like, on what step and for what? And who, you know, will you get my number and why'd you ask me to share? No, for real. And he said, God asked me to call you and ask you to share. And he said, what do you have to say about that? It was nothing that I could say. And I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be able to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm very nervous. But every time when I get ready to talk about me, when I'm getting ready to tell the truth, I get nervous anyway. A lot of times I feel like, you know, I'm not worthy to share. Or, I don't know. It's so overwhelming for me. My clean date is September the 2nd, 1992. I came in this fellowship through an outpatient program through Providence Seton House Hospital. And when I came into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I really didn't have a clue. Only thing that I knew is that I wanted to change my life, you know, because I was living in some ways that I know I wasn't raised to live. So I began to come into the outpatient program. I didn't go into a treatment program because I wasn't as bad as you guys was. I was smoking Woolies, you know, and a lot of people say, well, how the hell did you get in Narcotics Anonymous and you was just smoking Woolies? And I was sprinkling crack cocaine on marijuana. Sometimes I was sprinkling it on tie sticks. Sometimes I was sprinkling it, if I ain't had no reefer, I was sprinkling it on tobacco, right? And when they asked me that question, they was like, oh, please. And then they was like, oh, you don't even look like an addict. But what do an addict look like? I was a slick, sneaky addict. So I was still dressing up. I was still fly. I was still, you know, I still had money in my pocket. And I still came from a family that had it going on. But the bottom line is that I was a dressed-up garbage can. So when I came into the outpatient program, I just came into the outpatient program just to stop smoking Woolies. Wasn't nobody going to tell me that I couldn't, you know, have a little drink here and there, or I couldn't, you know, smoke some reefer here and there. Of course, I worked two jobs and I deserve it, you know, especially on the weekends. So after coming around for a couple of 24 hours and finding out that if you want to be clean, Shirley, you have to be total abstinence. You can't drink. You know, you can't smoke no reefer or none of that because it only going to lead you back to your drug of choice. You know, and going back to the question when somebody asked me, well, how did you get into the program just by smoking Woolies or whatever? And I say this, and I say it all the time. I geek just the same. You know, I identify with the pain. And the pain was great. And I couldn't get past my mother's house. And when I first came into the program without even knowing about a step, I came in on a third step, having turned my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. I knew that he would take care of me. It was no doubt in my mind. I got to know God and reestablish my relationship when I came to the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, but God had always been in my life. He had always protected me. and he had always looked over me and watched after me when I was in the streets. 3-4 o'clock in the morning, smoking booties all night long. And I'm grateful for that. Anything could have happened to me. Anything. So I'm grateful to God. And when I got in the outpatient program and I started looking at some of them tapes and some of those movies that they were showing, I knew right then and there that I couldn't drink no more. And I couldn't get high anymore. Because it was only ruining my life. It was in the program that I surrendered. Because I just couldn't see fit to use again and continue to live in the way that I was living. I became honest, I became willing, I became open to accept the suggestions that was given to me so I can live better. I knew something had to be wrong with me. I knew something had to be wrong with me. There was no doubt in my mind. Because when I got to the second step, and the first step admitting that I was unmanageable, I was powerless, and all the limitations in that first step, knowing that I couldn't do nothing without God. And in the second step, that I asked God to help me, to restore me to my right thinking. People always say it's about insanity, but it's about restoration for me. Call me a crybaby, call me what you want to call me, but it just, it's like, it's like something that's in my gut, it's in my gut, I gotta get it out, I gotta get it out. So I had to be restored to my right thinking, and the cloud had lifted, and people was talking, saying little things, oh, don't get in no relationship, your first year in recovery, and this and that, and the other. And I was in a relationship. And I, you know, I was like, oh, Lord, you know, I said, what am I going to do, what I'm going to do? So when I got home that night, I said, fellowship said, I got to let you go. He said, the fellowship said, you got to let me go. I said, yes. But at that time, I had realized that I ain't like him no way. In the beginning of the relationship, everything was grand. You know, we was, you know, going out, and he was treating me to filet mignon when I was eating steak, and, you know, we was eating just lobsters and shrimps and all that. He had it going on. But that was because I was high. I wasn't thinking right. I didn't know no better. So he said, you need to go back to the fellowship, because he said, I'd take you to the meetings. He said, I said, but you don't bring me back home. The people in the rooms, they bring me back home because they said if you get to the meeting, we'll take you home. Just get there, we'll take you home. And another thing about that whole situation was is that I was in an outpatient program, and I went through the outpatient program through welfare. I had Medicaid or whatever you want to call it. And I was able to get a cab. So a cab would bring me back or they would take me there, whatever. And so he said, yeah, you telling people they brainwashing you. And so at the time, I didn't have no sponsor. I had a temporary sponsor. She became a real good friend of mine, and she was temporary sponsoring me because, somebody had said, watch who you want to be like and watch who you don't want to be like. So I was watching. You know, I was making sure that when I picked the sponsor, that I picked somebody that was looking out for my best interest, because everybody in the rooms ain't looking out for your best interest. Everybody in the rooms, just like Kitta said, do not like you. And I knew it was a whole lot of people that didn't like me, but I didn't care because I kept on loving on them anyway, because that's all I know how to do. So in the third step, coming back to what led me to the rooms in the first place, I made a decision to cast everything over the care of God as I understood him, trusting that he would care for me and take care of me, you know, because I just wanted to change my life. I wanted something different. And embarking on the fourth step, I was scared to death. I was so afraid. There was no way. I procrastinated. It was procrastination then. And my sponsor kept on calling me. And I ain't even gonna say my whole name, but she kept on saying she called my whole name, Shelly. I can't even demonstrate it without calling my whole name, you know. And I still want to be anonymous because I don't never know, you know, who who in here for real. And she was like, Shelly. You, what is up with you? You need to do what you need to do. She would call. You need to do what you need to do. I was scared. She said, it's only going to free you. She said, it's only going to free you from the records of your past. Because I didn't have a clue. Only thing I knew is that I needed to take it. I needed to do a thorough fourth step. You know, I had a sponsor prior to her that I had to wind up, you know, no fault or neither one of us. I don't even know how to explain that neither. But the bottom line is that she was no longer my sponsor, and I had to get another sponsor. And at this time, I didn't want to do another fourth step because of the pain that it caused me when I did it the first time. But my sponsor assured me, she said, I can assure you that if you do this fourth step, you're going to be all right. Mm-hmm. Ain't nothing to be afraid of. She said, you're going to be free. Mm-hmm. And like Kidam said, I was introduced to me in that fourth step, and I found out that I wasn't all that bad. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of those things that I had gone through and a lot of the shame and the guilt that I had felt, you know, for me, if you leave it up to me, it can't, you know, it was because of somebody else. It was because, you know, all the times we moved from house to house to house, it was because, you know, the broken relationships in my household, you know, the divorce. I mean, well, not the divorce, but because my mother and father, they separated and they never divorced, you know, but it was all because of the mixed emotions, all the things that we were introduced to as children that we had not a clue. You know, what was going on, the things that I would see going on in my household. You know, I come from a family of four. I'm the youngest. I'm the baby. I got three brothers. And trust and believe me, I am not trying to say anything bad about my brothers, but my brothers was reckless. They was reckless. So I experienced and I saw a whole lot of stuff that we were told not to do in the household that they did right there in there. Don't do what I do, you know, do what I say, you know. And so I was really, really torn about that. And so I didn't have a clue really what the fourth step would entail, you know. So I was afraid of it. But like I said, going through the fourth step and searching myself and finding out who I was and doing it thoroughly this time, I was able to free myself from a whole lot of things and able to admit to God some of the things that I had found out in the fourth step, which he already knew anyway, and turning everything over. And when the fifth step talk about admitting to God to another human being exactly nature of your wrong, I was like, I ain't got to share no whole lot of stuff at the podium. It's to God, to myself, and another human being, and that another human being was going to be my sponsor. You know what I'm saying? I freed myself that way. And finding out the courage to defects, I also found out some of the courage to defects, as I was told to point out three glaring courage to defects. You know, that hindered me, you know, so I can get some help in the sixth step so far as asking God to help me to remove the defects of courage. It was so much stuff. It was so much stuff that I had wrote down on paper. I didn't have a clue at that time that I needed to write these particular things down on paper because it was going to help me with the eighth step, that those places, those people, and all of that was my eighth step list. It was really, really hard for me because my thing is that I'm a serving person. I'm a servant of God's. I'm a serving person. I don't have no gift of gab. You know, I don't manipulate things. I don't manipulate people. You know, indirectly I do, but directly I never knew that that's what I was doing. You know, so there was no way in the world that I really, really knew about all the courage defects that, you know, it was a list, and it had all these courage defects. I was like, I don't have no courage defects, and it was all these courage defects on the list, right? And And my sponsor had the thing like that. So you saying that you this, you not this, you not this, you not this. And I guess she was, I don't know if she was pointing out some of the things that she thought I was or what. And I asked her, so I said, you pointing all these things out? I said, you tell me. You tell me. She said, it ain't for me to tell you. You'll come to your own conclusion of all of that. You'll find out exactly what it is that you need to work on, but you need to go to God and have him to remove, correct, and all of that. And I was, you know, I don't know if I was entirely ready. I just wanted to live differently. You know what I'm saying? I was just ready to change. I was ready to move on in my recovery. I was tired of being stagnated. I was tired of being lazy. And I just wanted to do some more work because, you know, like I said, my other sponsor, after a while when she was no longer my sponsor, I was really, really, one more time again, looking around, trying to find another sponsor, you know, that was going to suit me. You know what I'm saying? Somebody that I can really, really trust and believe in, and somebody that was going to tell me the truth. And even more so, you know, somebody on a spiritual level, you know. And so I wasn't even seeking. I wasn't even looking. I came to the convention one year. And, you know, I had already seen this person. And, you know, and I was watching her and stuff like that. And, you know, how they say you more like than different. And I was listening to her story and stuff like that and how she was sharing and everything and how she was sharing that she had a relationship with God. And, you know, and it seemed spiritual, on a spiritual nature to me. So after the meeting was over with, I asked her, could she sponsor me? And she just looked at me. And she said, I'm going to give you my number. You call me. And I had been calling and calling and trying to track her down and calling her. And then one day I went over to the bottom of the borough meeting. And she was over there. And when the meeting was all over with, I went to and I hugged her. And I said, I still want you to be my sponsor. She said, how you been doing in this? Because I had been calling her and stuff like that. And we've been playing phone tag. And she'll call lead messages. I'll call lead messages. And I said, I still want you to be my sponsor. And it started from there. And she has really, really helped me out a lot, especially with the things that I'm in denial about when it comes to me and myself, because, you know, you can't tell me I ain't perfect. And I got that, I'm serious, I got that craziness from my mother because she think you're supposed to do everything perfect. Can't nothing, she from South Carolina, and she think you're supposed to do everything perfect. Ain't nothing supposed to be out of order. Everything supposed to be spick and span. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to be able to eat off the floor. You're supposed to be able to do this. You're supposed to be over there. Your hair can't be out of place. Just craziness, you know? And so I just been so overwhelmed with the fact of getting used to being human, you know what I'm saying, and getting used to admitting that I do have these character defects and I do have to ask God to help me to work on them. And even though I think a lot of times I don't work on them and they arrested and they come, you know, coming back in my life or they resurface, I have to do what I have to do, you know, to make sure that my behavior, you know, is intact. When I had put all the information down out of my fourth step and make my eighth step list, I had to make two different lists. The institutions and my family members, people, coworkers, friends. It was so much. It was just so much. You know, some of the people that I was in relationship with that I had no intention. They wanted a relationship with me and all that, but I had no intentions on, you know, being in a relationship with them. I just wanted to kick it. You know, I just wanted to swing out, like I said in the beginning, swing out and have some little fun and all of that type of stuff. I wasn't going to commit to nothing because I wasn't ready for that. And so I had my little two separate lists, and when I came to the ninth step, made direct amends to such people, except when to do so would injure them others, I was like, I don't owe nobody no amends. I don't owe nobody no amends. They harmed me. I was ready to do the ninth step. I was ready to do it. They harmed me. I had always been loving and caring in my approach with people. I had always put things on the table and let them know exactly where I was at. So by you knowing that, you should already know. That because, you know, and I used to always say, And I used to always say, some of these women around here is feeble-minded, but I'm not feeble-minded. When my yays mean yay and my nays mean nay. So when I put it out on the table and you think you're going to change the game, then that's on you. And it don't make no difference what situation. It could be a man. It could be a co-worker. It could be whatever. You already know what's up. But I was listening to this lady share the other day, and what she said was, because I told my sponsor, I said, there is no way in the world if golf fingers was open would I go and make amends to them so I can break out of handcuffs. No, not God. I'm not going to golf fingers and say, oh, yeah, me and my friend Gail, she used to come in here and run capers, and I used to be pointing out the stuff that she needed to get me or steal me, and I would pay her when she get outside the door. I wasn't going to do that. My sponsor just started busting out laughing. I was not going to do that. But I was so eager to do and make the amends because I knew it meant freedom. Because it was some people in my family members and stuff that I had harmed, and they had harmed me. And regardless of what part I paid, I don't care what it is. Anybody that knows me, I'm not a confrontational person. You know, I'm a loving and I'm a caring person. If I cause you harm, I'm going to make amends promptly right then and there. You know what I'm saying? Even if I don't know, it could be you, it was your fault. I'm going to still say that I am sorry because that's how I live. I live on spiritual principles, you know, and I don't want to go around walking around in this fellowship with animosity, you know, with no one. I don't want to be mad at no one. I don't want nobody to be mad at me. As a matter of fact, I do everything possible for people not to be mad at me. I do everything possible for people to love me, the people that is in my life. Man, I was just reading something. I just want to share this on the ninth step. Things that I had to do to prepare myself because of the fact that I thought people owed me amends and I didn't need to go to them and say nothing because they had caused me harm. Not to say I'm perfect. I ain't caused nobody no harm, because the thing about me is that people can look at my expressions and stuff like that, and my expressions might tell really how I'm feeling without me saying a word, and that's causing indirect harm right there. You know, but it say we will be confronted with many obstacles in doing this step. Procrastination will pop up, telling us that the right time has not yet arrived. We will often manufacture possible excuses for dodging the making of direct amends. Above all, we should be absolutely sure we are not delaying because we're afraid. And I was afraid. I was afraid because I didn't know how people was going to perceive it. I didn't know if I was going to get rejected. I didn't know if it was going to cause more harm. And I had another family member. She was really mean, and she used to always say, soon I see her, I'm gonna go to her head. I'm gonna this and that and the other. And she was a female. And so I didn't want to go. When we were, I was scared to go to some of the family reunions. Because I wanted, I'm serious, that is not funny. Because... Ooh, I was scared to go to some of the family reunions because she kept on saying, yeah, but I guess she thinks she's better than us because she in a program now and she ain't using. And I remember she was spending all her checks up and all the money. She was selling all the family that on the bus and stuff. So I was kind of scared to go and say anything to her, right? And so that was one of the reasons why a lot of times I didn't go to some of the family reunions. And then on top of that, they were still drinking and they were still using. But I just thank God. I thank God. And it goes on to say, remember that in most cases, we will require a lifetime to complete the ninth step. Yeah. A lifetime. We'll be making amends forever. We'll be making amends forever with people in these rooms. You know, I heard somebody say, oh, yeah, people, you know, and I used to say it too, they got paper tissue feelings. And I'd be crying all the time, though. But they was like, they need to grow the hell up. Why you got always go and apologize? Why you got always go and apologize to them? If they was doing some damn step work and they would grow the hell up, then you wouldn't have to keep on going back and apologizing, 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 apologizing. And I had to get prepared. It says here, meditation and prayer are necessary in order to make amends. Before making the amends, it should be preceded by prayer. conscious contact with God in the matter of making amends will not only bring about a more satisfactory result, but can aid us in determining those amends to avoid which may injure others, which was me in that situation I just talked about. The readiness to take the full consequences of our past acts and to take responsibility for the well-being of others at the same time is the very spirit of the ninth step. Our behavior more than our words will convince those people to whom we are making direct amends. And, you know, and I thought it was going to cause me a whole lot of pain, but for real, it relieved me a whole lot of pain. It brought back those good past relationships that I had with my families and other people, co-workers as well. Because if I was to go down the list and keep on talking about it, just like the literature said, it could take forever. You know, it could take forever. And a lot of times I'm going to admit this, a lot of times I get jumbled up and I get confused in what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be doing, who I should be making amends to, who I shouldn't be making amends to. Because at first I was caught up on the mere fact is that they owe me the apology. But for real, they don't owe me nothing. I need to make it right with them so I can be right and I can set right in my skin and in my spirituality. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm telling you, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. It has changed my entire life, and I would not give it up for nothing in the world. And I'm not going to say too much or nothing else because I'll start lying. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm serious. I am so overwhelmed, and I just been crying. And the motto is that regardless of what happened, it's Narcotics Anonymous. I don't care what I go through. I've been going through some financial situations. I've been going through up and down in some job situations. Whatever the fact may be, life has shown up. But regardless of what, I am not going to use, and I will never, ever go out like no sucker. My name is Shirley. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Okay, family, I'm Jamila. I'm an addict. I have one quick announcement for everybody in here, and when you get out, share it with other people. Cars that are parked on the left side of the convention center by the dumpsters, please move your car or they're going to tow it. So if you're going to be at the 8:00 meeting tonight, please do not park your car there because they're towing cars. So you can stay seated, please, while we say the Serenity Prayer as we close out this workshop. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Yes, the left side. When you go out to the convention, the left side.
Okay.
I'm going to see him. That's your best.